It's the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast, where we spend time chatting with expert gardening guests and we ask for their favorite tip. I'm Christy Wilhelmi. Thanks for joining me. Today's guest is Darren Butler, a consulting arborist, a certified arborist, a master gardener, ecological landscape designer, and a landscape consultant. Darren is also co-founder of Garden Zeus, the California-specific online gardening resource for growing your own food. Darren, thanks for being here.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, we haven't seen each other in so long, and I'm so glad that you're doing well. I don't even remember how we met anymore, but I do remember that we bonded over nerdy conversations about sewage sludge in, like, potting soil and store-bought compost mixes and lead in urban soils. And I think it's, I'm just yammering on now, but you have such a broad knowledge of nature's process. How did this all begin for you?
Well, I believe, like so many people who work with plants and trees, I grew up enjoying nature. There was a small strip of woods behind my home that was in upstate New York, a remnant of native woods. So I was playing around trees from the time I could walk. My first gardening was at age 5. I still remember the first seed I ever planted, which was a snap pea. And so that brought me into gardening in nature very early. And I returned to that as an adult and in my teen years for work.
So then, as an adult, what made you go towards all of these certifications that you've had in your life?
Well, I would say the turning point for me was actually a very serious car accident in my late teens. Oh. So I was almost killed, had a long list of very serious and critical injuries. And after that, I just did not want to return to college. Oh. So I set out on my own and started working with plants. After the car accident, I took a job working as a groundskeeper at a large memorial park in Northern California and never left working with plants since then.
Oh, so you've had experience growing on both coasts and in the north and in the south.
And in between in Utah, where my later childhood was with gardening.
Oh, wow. So you really know a lot about gardening all over this country. That's pretty cool. Since one of your foci is tree care, I want to jump in and talk all about trees. We see a lot of trees planted incorrectly, don't we?
What I see most often is the results of trees having been planted incorrectly as of years later when the trees are not doing well.
And so what are the most common mistakes you often see, and, or another way of putting it, what is the right way to plant a tree?
Well, the most common issue or mistake is just planting the trees too deeply. Mm-hmm. They end up too deep in the ground. That often occurs because too large of a hole is dug, and when the soil settles, the tree settles.
Ah.
So it may end up an inch or two or three below ground, with the trunk above the root flare, which is where the roots meet the bark. If that's buried, the tree will tend to be sick for as long as it lives and tend to have diseases and problems that usually are not associated with the planting.
Right. I always think of the root flare as that, like, if you're standing up and you stick your foot out about 3 feet, your leg is the first root flare. That it's just like the visual of what a tree is doing when you look at it, right? I mean, is that,
yes,
how you
absolutely
would agree?
So, well, the root flare is technically at the top of the root crown, right where the trunk meets the roots.
The roots. Okay.
And what you're describing would sound to me like a buttressing root.
Okay.
So, and trees develop those, like, more apparent above ground when they're subject to wind or other stress, or they're just very heavy and they need more support. They grow more wood into what we would call a buttress or a buttressing root that way.
Okay.
But even on tiny trees, we want to see a small root right at the surface level when the tree is planted.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of confusion about where the graft point is located on the tree versus the root flare, because a common knowledge, I think, in a lot of circles is make sure you don't bury the graft point, but the root flare is even below that.
Normally it's a few to several inches below that, yes.
Yeah.
So let me...
Yes, go.
One of the areas of tree care that actually requires the most skill is selecting trees for purchase. And this is an often overlooked area. So planting a tree correctly actually begins with purchasing.
Right.
Chances are if you just order a tree or have it delivered or just grab a tree that looks okay, has nice green leaves, mm-hmm. it may not have good stem structure and it may be in the pot too deep.
So what do you look for?
Well, the standard nursery advice is to plant a tree at the same level that it was in the nursery pot.
Right, which is not necessarily right.
Which is often not right. I would say usually not right. I have great respect for nursery workers and nursery personnel. They know a lot. But in a nursery setting, they're often looking for very short advice, like something that they can say in one sentence that will help people feel like they can purchase the item and leave.
Yeah.
And so that advice to plant the tree at the same level in the nursery pot helps people say, oh, I can do that. And then they buy the tree and they leave. So that works. However, since the tree is likely going to be too deep in the pot, that leads to problems later. So ideally at the nursery, you would be moving soil very gently from the trunk to try to locate the top root of the tree. So the goal before the tree is planted is to identify the actual root ball, the depth of the roots. So that begins with the first significant root. So on a young fruit tree, we would be looking for an 1/8 inch or 1/4 inch root, not a teeny little wispy root. It might have grown from the trunk usually, but the first significant root. Mm-hmm. And then there may be soil without roots at the bottom of the pot. So we're looking when we plant the tree for the actual depth of the root ball. If you can determine that the tree has a good root ball in the nursery, that's ideal. So if you go down 4 inches and still haven't seen any roots, you may only have a 2-inch root ball, which will result in a very shallowly rooted tree that will probably need staking and will dry out quickly. So ideally, we're looking for a deeper root ball and a surface root near the top of the nursery pot, along with good stem structure and other good health in the tree. So,
and that doesn't feel too overwhelming for some people, but, you know, because they can't really unpot a nursery pot at the nursery, people will start
not really a
asking
good idea,
questions.
Yes.
So is there a way to tell from the root end of things, I mean, without unearthing the pot?
Well, I try to find that top root, which you can usually do, and then gauge the depth of from there to the bottom of the pot. Mm. And if it looks like there's a decent root ball, that's encouraging. That may be the best we can do.
Got it.
So when the tree is planted, the key, if you remember nothing else, is to dig a hole that is only as deep as the tree's root ball, mm-hmm. or maybe slightly less deep so that the tree is slightly higher in the planting hole. That's the key to having a healthy long-term tree from the planting phase onward. So with some fruit trees or other trees, this may only be 2 inches. It may be 3 inches. Maybe it's 4 or 5. But often people set out the 5-gallon pot, attack the soil with a pick, they get an 18-inch hole, fill it up with stuff, and then they stick the tree in, and then as the soil settles, the tree will drop.
Yeah. I've got one of those out front, in fact, where that happened. And we put gravel on the bottom, and that's a terrible thing to do, and it's never grown. Yeah.
And over years, then you get the bugs, you get, you mm-hmm. know, trees that dry out, lots of problems, and usually people don't realize it was because of the way the tree was planted.
Got it. Quick side note. Do you recommend buying bare root fruit trees?
Sure. Bare root trees are great. As long as you get them in season and you know, plant them reasonably quickly or take care of them until they're planted.
Right. But you can really see the structure of the roots. I mean, because they come in sawdust, and so it's right there.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I would say, especially if you're willing to prune roots, it helps to see the structure.
Oh gosh, that's another whole set of questions. Okay, we'll come back to that. I wanna ask about root pruning.
Well, let me finish just quickly
on
planting, just a couple of sentences, and then see if you have other questions.
Yeah.
So the compaction in the soil is generally almost always bad.
Yeah.
The one time that I compact soil is directly under the root ball of a new woody plant or a tree. So that small area of, you know, maybe a square foot or several square inches of soil, if it's compacted, won't harm the tree, but the tree will root out in various directions. But if the tree sinks, it will harm the tree. So to plant the tree, you take the tree out of the pot. You determine the depth of the root ball from that top root. You remove all the soil above the top root, wherever that is, to the bottom of the root ball. Dig a hole that may only be a few inches deep.
Mm-hmm.
Compact the soil if necessary where it's planted. It's best to dig a wide hole, so it, like a saucer shaped
right.
with curving sides, so that the roots can spread laterally in the upper soil. Backfill with the same soil, and any amendments, preferably organic amendments, go on top of the soil. We call it top dressing.
Got it. Yeah, I love the saucer is a great visual on how to dig that hole, because it's most people just dig a hole that's the same size or slightly larger in the same shape as that nursery pot, and then the roots really have to work to get sideways.
Right. So they typically are oxygen deprived. In the nearby soil is usually compacted, and they have difficulty growing into it, or there's less oxygen in that soil. Also, that can create what we call a perched water table, which is basically like a container in the ground bordered by a compacted soil where water may sit and be slow to
right.
infiltrate.
I call that the bathtub effect, where where water goes down into the hole but doesn't permeate the soil, and it just sits there and eventually chokes out the plant.
Right.
Yeah. All right, can we jump back to root pruning? Because this
yes.
is a scary topic. I think a lot of people would be afraid to prune the roots of a tree. What's it look like? What do you do? How do you know what to prune?
Well, it is challenging, so this is more skilled. Most roots will tend to grow back in the same way that they were before you pruned them. And with many of our trees purchased in pots or grown in limited areas, even bare root trees, they may have circling roots or constricted roots. So just for basic purposes, cutting anything that's broken, that's dead, that's curving back on itself, roots that are in conflict with each other, and then spreading the roots out as much as possible into maybe like a hand shape or just whatever you can do in the hole is the best basic approach.
Right. People talk about planting over a cone of soil. Do you recommend that kind of a thing? Is that get that hand shape that you're looking for?
As long as I'm sure that I can do a cone without having the tree sink.
Right, because that's a loose soil most of the
yeah,
time.
I mean, if it's a larger tree and it's a large cone, I would not do that. This is all part of the challenge. You want to avoid loose and settling soil, also air pockets. So if you build a cone or maybe an upside down bowl or something under the tree
mm-hmm.
to support the roots, and you don't have soil between roots, the roots can dry out, and then even major roots can die. Even though the soil looks solid from the surface, if there are gaps underneath.
Okay, yeah. So then, do you have a method for preventing gaps and holes and air pockets?
Well, if you dig a hole that's the right level, then just watering in thoroughly afterward will usually cause the soil to settle in and surround the roots.
Okay, sounds simple enough.
And a quick further note on the bare root trees. In general, in many areas of Southern California where I work, I'm shifting clients, sadly, away from most deciduous and temperate fruit trees, even the low chill varieties, because our winters are now so warm that in some areas we're going a few years at a time where people are not getting much fruit or getting any fruit just because we don't have enough cold weather during the winter. So I'm shifting toward subtropicals and tropicals, which often are not deciduous, and so I'm not encouraging clients to plant as many bare root trees, essentially.
So when you say subtropical and tropical, can you give us some examples of fruits that you're recommending for people?
Sure. Anonas.
I don't even know what that is.
Cherimoyas,
okay.
Ice cream bean.
Oh, wow.
There are a lot of really, really fun fruits. Also, those are less common in Southern California. Others that have been planted more frequently include feijoas. Pineapple guava
mm-hmm.
is a great tree for almost any area of Southern California. One of my top two favorite fruits also.
Okay. What do you like to do with that? I'm just curious, because
you
have to love those, really.
So you don't love them. That kind of a question. Usually, what do you do with them? You eat them.
Because I know some people do a lot of, you know, making jam with some of the more seedy guavas, and And so, you know, I'm always wondering, because I'm not much of a jam person. So do you...
Yeah, I'm not either. I don't eat
You just eat them
sweet.
Fresh.
Well, so feijoas are different than the regular, the common guava.
Right.
They are a bit seedy. They're smaller. They're kind of pointy and green or greenish yellow, I believe, as they're ripening.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever had more than I could just eat.
Okay.
I mean, they usually don't last more than a day or two around me. So.
Got it. All right. And, you know, I know that... I keep saying Mexico's weather is moving north because our hardiness zones are shifting north. And so we've started getting rain in July here in Los Angeles, which is unheard of. But for the last 4 years-ish, we've had rain in July. Not much, but enough to be like, huh, it's kind of like Mexico because they get a lot of rain in that. And I feel like that makes sense with you suggesting that we move to tropical and subtropical varieties. That is in alignment with what's coming, I think, in terms of our weather patterns.
I'm essentially trying to look forward. Like, the fruit trees we're planting now will presumably be grown for, 20, 30, 40, maybe 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So looking forward, the issues that we're facing now will be even more extreme. So, I'm just trying to serve clients by providing trees that will fruit for them over decades.
Right. So are there any typical fruits that people do love that are even low chill that you still are recommending?
Very, very few. The best are probably figs.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the low chill apples are still fruiting okay. Most of the stone fruit I see is pretty much on the way out for Southern California, unless you're in an area that's kind of a cold pocket. There are some areas near the coast and in, slightly higher elevation that can still grow those fruits. But plums, apricots, peaches, and nectarines, I'm pretty much...
You're giving up on those.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
They also have a lot of other problems. There have been so many peach tree borers in the last few years.
Yeah, that's true. And with all the boring insects that are taking down a lot of the stone fruits, I see people chopping them down and putting in another one. How are you as an arborist? What's your experience around dealing with those insect infestations?
Well, there are effective pesticides. I don't use pesticides, but that's kind of the... for people who really want to handle the problem, that's probably the most effective. You have to time application very carefully. I'm trying to remember, I don't use them. I believe it's the emergence of adults, which is twice per year for I think the variety of borer we have here. Other than that, it's very difficult. They can attack healthy trees, normally younger trees from about age 2 or 3 to 5 or 6. So once the trees get thicker bark at the root crown, they're usually less susceptible. So supporting the trees as much as possible. So providing the best environmental conditions. And then also, in most cases, you can manually kill, as much as I hate doing that, you can manually kill the larvae in their holes at the root crown. It takes effort and time and maybe some practice or expertise. But that's my preferred method at this point, non-toxic, to try to save trees.
Okay. I know that Dr. Elaine Ingham, I've taken compost and compost tea workshops from her, she was experimenting with injecting the right biology into the holes that attacks the bacteria that grows inside, which is in some cases, not all borers, but some phagus, shot hole borers, whatever. They basically are breeding bacteria in their canals, the channels that they've dug in the tree. And she was testing that to kill off the bacteria. And that seemed to be an avenue to go down. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm strongly in favor of treating problems with life as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so for 15 years now, I've promoted and looked for ways of managing pests and diseases by applying something that's alive rather than killing.
Yes!
And Elaine Ingham is a huge pioneer in this area. I respect and admire her tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
The functional challenge with that is the amount of time and expertise that's required to use, this is my opinion, to use compost tea on the ground for real clients, residential clients who are busy. They don't have the expertise.
Right.
And it's actually fairly challenging to produce good compost tea. So, in my perspective, just a gap in the practicality when you're dealing with real issues on the ground in managing compost tea and applying it for these problems. I believe that it can work.
Right. So seek professional help from those who do it, who do compost tea professionally.
I would absolutely recommend that. Yes. I mean, if we had an army of experts with compost tea in Southern California, we would have many fewer pests.
It's true. And we do have a few. There are a few, but I would love there to be more. I'm an amateur myself. I do have a microscope to check my compost under a microscope before I brew tea with it and whatnot. But it is a skill. It's a more advanced skill set. All right, so let's talk, since you're talking about things, you prefer to use things that are alive than things that are dead. Let's talk about soil fertility and what are your favorite ways to improve soil fertility around fruit trees production? So, you know, whether it's the soil or the plant itself.
Well, the first step to me is to just shift focus from the plant to the soil.
Yes.
So there's an old saying, I believe it's John Jevons, grow soil, not plants.
Yes.
And that's where it starts. So just as a point of departure or a starting place, everything that you think you need to do to the plants, if you shift your focus to doing that for the soil, that's a great first step. So if a gardener thinks of himself or herself as growing soil, so feeding soil, watering soil, protecting soil, and developing living systems, ecosystems in the soil, as a primary first step, then that takes care of the plants. So the microbes, beneficial organisms in the soil, literally will take care of plants and help them on a cell-by-cell or even molecule-by-molecule basis in a way that humans cannot do. It's impossible. We actually can't really feed plants. We can't water plants. They eat sunlight.
And they take their nutrients from the soil.
Right. We can dump these kind of macro volumes of water at the soil and hope for the best, but it's not up to us to get the water into the plant. So having an active living system around a tree or a plant is the best way to support it. And to do that, we need to feed soil and water soil and take care of soil.
So what are your recommendations for that?
Well, I like to start with testing soil. There are lots of issues with our soils in Southern California. So knowing what's actually in the soil for nutrients and particularly metals in many cases is very, very important. In some cases, there may be levels of toxic metals either to plants and or people that suggest that it's not really a good idea to be gardening in the soil. Mm-hmm. So that's something that should be determined first. And then I like providing lots of organic matter, mulch, just feeding the soil and keeping the soil moist. And then also soil needs plant roots in it to be fertile and to stay healthy. The plants start the whole cycle of the ecosystem by the exudates, the materials they put out from their roots, which then create the conditions for the microbes to grow that will support them.
Right. I love that. I don't know if I've shared this on this podcast before, but there's the notion I love the most, I think, is how soil microbes determine the soil pH, depending on what the plant needs. The plant will send out exudates that will either breed more bacteria or feed more bacteria or more fungi, and then those changes happen within, I'm not saying this right, but basically the bacteria and the fungi will determine whether a soil can be alkaline or acidic. And I love that.
Yes.
It's the coolest thing ever.
Our soils here are so alkaline for the most part that generally we're looking to acidify as much as possible. So the woody mulches are, to encourage fungal organisms are helpful.
Right. Mulch is a fungal food.
Absolutely. Well, woody mulch, yes.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit more about mulch, because I know that some people put down mulch in a way that hampers the tree rather than helps it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So mulch, organic mulch particularly, is overwhelmingly positive, but it is possible to harm trees. So there are two main issues. One is oxygen exchange. So we think of plants and trees as producing oxygen. They're photosynthetic, they take in carbon dioxide, they put out oxygen. Mm-hmm. But plant and tree roots need to breathe air. They put out carbon dioxide in very small amounts. So if you have a layer of mulch that's too thick, that can change the oxygen exchange with roots and can harm or kill trees. So I have seen mulch jobs done by professional landscapers that were very thick and killed beautiful mature trees just from
the mulch.
Generally, 2 or 3 inches should be fine. When you're getting into 6 or 7 inches,
that's really a lot of mulch.
That's a lot of mulch.
That's almost like I imagine one of those, you know, in a play, like at McDonald's play, whatever house, that they have the ball tubs where the kids go in with those multicolored balls. I feel like that would, when you have way too much mulch or gravel down anywhere on a landscape and it's too thick, you start sinking in. It's kind of weird and quicksandy. So that's way too much. But you're saying 2 to 3 inches is the right amount?
Well, like so many plant issues, there isn't a set right amount. Mm-hmm. If you have soil with good tilth and good structure that's loose and has good pore space that naturally absorbs oxygen better, you can have a thicker mulch. If you have a compacted sandy clay that has no pore space, you know, any mulch may be an inhibitor to oxygen.
Okay.
So it's site specific, but you know, for that one sentence,
right,
that can make people feel happy, like I would say 2 to 3 inches is usually safe, particularly when combined with the second important issue, which is not mulching directly on main roots or the main trunk.
So you start your mulch layer how far away from the trunk?
So I can come up with a rule. How about 2 to 3 times minimum the diameter of the trunk? So if you have a trunk that's a foot wide at the base, 2 or 3 feet away minimum.
Okay.
If you have this is also for mature trees. It's a little, younger trees are a little more vigorous and can handle mulch closer to the trunk. But if you have I like my rule. If you have a 2-inch young fruit tree.
Uh huh.
So 5 or 6 inches from the trunk, I can do that. That
okay.
sounds good to me.
That works. I like that.
So this will help with oxygen exchange, but also the mulch traps moisture against the trunk and against the main roots. And most species are just not equipped to deal with that. It encourages pathogens and root rots and various problems. So you want to be able to see your main roots, keep the mulch a foot away from big roots or 18 inches and away from the main trunk. Or on a large tree, start mulching midway from the drip line, from the edge of the tree to the trunk, where there aren't as many big surface roots, and that should be fine in most cases.
Right. And just for those who aren't aware, the drip line is a technical word for basically where the branch tips are.
Right. Literally where rain drips from the edges of the trees, the outside of the canopy of the tree.
Right. Okay, let's talk about Garden Zeus. It's your new website, and in the interest of full disclosure, I have contributed to that website. Tell us about what people can expect when they visit Garden Zeus.
Well, Garden Zeus is the answer by my business partner, Ann Clary, and myself to the difficulty in finding clear gardening advice for California and Southern California. So it's currently active only for Southern California for our customized gardening information.
Mm-hmm.
It's we've taken an innovative approach. So you go to the website, and for almost all Southern California zip codes, if you enter your zip code, it will then allow you to see and browse plant information for about 20 to 25 vegetables and some other plants and trees that's customized by zip code for you. So with seasonal advice, when to plant.
That's so cool.
any well-known pest issues for your areas, and so on and so forth. So we've used local expertise, including Christy and myself, to produce advice that actually applies to the dry Mediterranean climate and the seasons that we have here and the many opportunities that we have here that don't exist in much of the country, like gardening throughout the winter in most of Southern California.
Yeah, most gardening books are written for places that get snow or at least frost, and most of our area does not. I mean, maybe if you live in the canyon or up against the foothills, you'll get a frost, but generally speaking, we're growing year-round, and our winter, in fact, is this crappy time of year, August, September, October, when it's too hot to plant anything new, and the plants that are in the ground are just holding on for dear life.
So, absolutely right, yes.
Yeah. So when people go to Garden Zeus, they type in their zip code. They can find plant profiles that help guide them through the growing season. Anything else that they can find right now?
Well, we have hundreds of articles on many, many gardening topics, many on planting citrus and orange trees, some on planting natives. So our articles are not organized for browsing at the moment. So you can search on the website for a topic or search organically on the internet to find articles. So those are the main two features, the customized plant information and articles. And great. Also, there's also monthly seasonal information for many plants and in many areas, so that it'll tell you, you know, what to do in a vegetable garden in August in your zip code.
Nice. That's really specific. And it's right now just Southern California, but you expect to branch out to Northern California and anywhere else?
Well, the rest of the world would be great. It's a fascinating model for helping people using the dynamic tools available with technology now. The website is responsive, so it works on any device, phone, pad, computer. You can take your phone to the garden with you and be reading Garden Zoo's advice while you're planting.
Excellent.
So we'd love to have it in larger areas. It's a lot of work just to do a few thousand zip codes for California.
Yeah, well, we are spread out, and there are a lot of us, and the terrain here varies depending on where you live. So, I mean, I'm coastal, but what I give advice for here doesn't necessarily apply in the valley. So it's pretty diverse.
It is. It does change a lot for the warmer valleys. So to be sure people understand, the website is Garden Zeus. So Zeus is like the Greek god. Our logo is a lightning bolt carrot.
I love it.
It's kind of fun. That's all one word, gardenzeus.com will get you to the website.
Cool. All right, it is tip time. Do you have a favorite tip that you'd like to share with the Garden Nerd audience?
Absolutely, yes. So my tip for this podcast is to focus on figuring out what the primary problems are when you have an issue in your garden or landscape or with your tree. So often we are drawn to secondary problems. So these are the problems that develop after a tree or plant is stressed. And this includes most bug and disease problems. Mm-hmm. Whereas the primary problems are usually environmental, often soil, or they're also often from management, watering, planting a species that might not be the best. And so usually primary problems are either environmental and soil or something a person did. And many of the other problems are secondary, and you can fight them year after year and decade after decade without actually making them go away unless or until you locate and address the primary problems.
Can you give an example of a primary problem versus a secondary problem?
Primary problems would include soil compaction, high soil alkalinity, poor soil structure, soil metals, toxic metals, including high zinc or copper for plants. They would include overwatering, watering shallowly, watering trees with sprinklers.
Oh, in lawns. Yeah.
Yes.
yeah.
And secondary problems are usually the things that arrive to feed on the plants when they're stressed and they can't fight them off. So all the bugs, the beetles, the diseases, the pathogens. There are bugs and pathogens that can attack healthy trees. So in some cases, the bugs and diseases can be a primary problem. But generally speaking, there's a lot more focus on killing the current bug and not dealing with the real underlying issues.
Right. Yeah, I find that we have a lot of compaction because we've put down roads, or we drive tractors or heavy machinery over the soil that where the roots live in trees and that kind of thing. There's this fantastic photo out there on the interwebs that shows a tree that has fallen over and it has ripped up the entire lawn just a few inches. It's, you know, like this 4-inch layer of lawn that is grabbing onto the root system of this tree that has only grown shallow root systems across the lawn because that's how the lawn gets watered, and the tree itself has never gotten the deep watering that it needed. And I think that's
a beautiful example.
Right?
Yeah, the tree roots will grow where there's water and oxygen, and if that's in the top 4 inches,
that's where it grows.
That's where the tree roots will be, even if the tree is 100 feet tall.
Yeah, crazy. Well, that's a great tip. I thank you for sharing that, and thank you for being a guest on the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast.
Well, thank you. It's been wonderful.
Yeah. How do people find you?
So the best way would be my email. That's Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, at P-O-Box.com. It has an extra layer of spam protection. That's
okay.
That's my public email address, Darren at P.O. Box, just like a P.O. Box at the post office, .com.
Nice.
And my cell is 818-271-0963.
Really old school. I love it. And do you have any social media stuff that you want to share for Garden Zeus?
Well, Garden Zeus has a Facebook group. You can like and like us there and see hundreds of past posts. We're also active on Pinterest.
Okay, and on Pinterest you are Garden Zeus?
Search Garden Zeus on Pinterest.
Okay, great. All right, garden nerds, you'll find links to Darren's website, Garden Zeus, on gardennerd.com this week. We'll also post links to the social media feeds that Darren just mentioned. That's it for this week. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Visit us for tons of free gardening information on gardennerd.com. Show your support for this podcast and the other free stuff on Garden Nerd by becoming a Patreon subscriber. You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter under GardenNerd1, on Facebook as gardennerd.com, and of course, our Garden Nerd YouTube channel. Happy gardening!